I take refuge in the Buddha for the possibility of being awake, of being free. And just reflect for a minute on what that means for you right now. I take refuge in the Dharma or the Dhamma. I take refuge, I find support in the teachings about freedom, teachings about the way the mind works. I take refuge, I find support in the community of fellow practitioners with whom I can learn together, I can learn from. Thank you. And then the second area is following the ethical precepts during the time of the retreat. And again, it can be helpful to have the sense that we are following these ethical guidelines all the time for at least these 2 days. And you know, good to follow them afterwards. But the intention is to create more, to have a support for an environment that helps us to look deeply and to have a sense that others are doing the same. And to really the ethical guidelines are about not harming ourselves or others. They're very simple. You know, and so some of you know the 5 ethical precepts. We when we do retreats usually, we, and I think, is it done the same way here? Yeah, that we agree to follow as best we can these guidelines during the time of the retreat. And then we hope afterwards, of course, but that's another matter. You know, and so we have an agreement to do that, and we'll do a little bit of a ritual. The first, and they really are all different types of not harming. So the first is that we agree not to harm others. You know, it could be with action or with speech. You know, traditionally that means to not kill, especially. And the second is we don't take that which is not given, so it's not to steal. And again, these all have many different meanings. And in the book that I talked about, I actually have quite a lot on these ethical guidelines in terms of many, many levels of meaning, including individual interactions as well as what they mean on a social level. So there's a lot to be said, but that's, you're just doing a very simple approach here. And the 3rd, 4th, and 5th ones are about, we might say, energies in human beings which are sometimes difficult. The first is sexuality. The second is speech. And the third are substances, I say, which shift consciousness. We say sometimes intoxicants. And we have agreements here that we follow at least for these 2 days. And it's good, again, might not, for most of us, maybe doesn't change things too much, but it's good to remember these. And so with sexuality, we try during the retreat time here to really, it's really like keep our energy to ourselves. It's really, we cultivate a sense really of being here, but looking deeply at our own mind. So we want to keep our energies very much with our own selves, not to have things happening interpersonally as much as we can, you know. And you know, in everyday life, it mostly means being very caring and careful with sexuality. And it's not about sexuality as negative, not at all. You know, it's about being careful. And in terms of speech, we actually agree during the time of here, the 9 to 5, that we agree to what's sometimes called noble silence, or basically being silent, not to, you know, of course, we have some talking back and forth and so forth, and sometimes we need to ask a question. Maybe we'll read for something functional, you know, something like, you know, what should I do with this, or where's more toilet paper, or what? You know, and that's okay. But mostly we try to stay silent, and also that means that if we maybe we come with a friend or even a partner, we try to have here, while we're here 9 to 5, we try to have a sense that I'm really in my own space. Not so much a sense of, you know, not so much relating to if you have a friend or, you know, how are you doing and all that, but we try to just keep our own sense of our own space and be here really with some solitude, which can be very beautiful for friends or for people in couples. I mean, and there are a lot, again, a lot more teachings on speech, but mostly to be, you know, in the traditional teaching speech, there were 4 core teachings: to be truthful, to speak the truth, to be helpful, to come out of a kind heart, and to have good timing. You have to have all four together. So you can have, yeah, being truthful, being helpful, coming out of a good heart, and having good timing for your speaking. So you can be very truthful, very helpful, come out of a beautiful heart. If you have bad timing, it's a mess. Right. Anyway, I'm not going to, maybe we can say more of that at the end of tomorrow, but because it's I teach sometimes 7-day retreats on speech practice. So there's a lot there. It's, you know, I think we have 30 hours of material, so I gave you like 2 minutes. Okay? But that's the basis. But here it mostly means to just be focused more inwardly. You know, and then we have time for discussion. And then the last one, I think it's helpful here to have an agreement not to use intoxicants during the 2 days. I think that can be helpful. Again, not an absolute here, but it's just a helpful agreement. So that would mean mostly substances which shift consciousness in deliberate way, like
politics.
You know, it's up to you. Yeah, but it's true. I think when some of you know Thich Nhat Hanh, when he interprets the 5th precepts, he says, be careful about what you read in the newspapers. That's his interpretation. How much internet do I take in, right? Mm-hmm. Things like that. You know, how much do I... maybe we can talk later. But for here, it's mostly just to agree. Mostly we're talking about alcohol or...
Cell phone.
Yeah, it's actually helpful. I have some friends, when they teach retreats, they require cell phones to be given in to a central place. But here, I think mostly not use cell phone 9 to 5 unless you have an emergency or something very urgent. Of course, that's possible then. So maybe, does that work for people?
Yes.
Not to use cell phone 9 to 5.
And just they use this tablet to write my notes, not the phone.
I think that's okay, yeah. It's a little dangerous, but it's okay. I know, now a lot of people, they have cell phones, the only way they have don't have a watch anymore, right? They just use cell phone for time, right? So, anyway. But to agree, maybe not this evening to use alcohol or marijuana or anything like that. Okay. And any questions about any of those? Is that an agreement? So actually, I'll go through again each of the 5. We'll do a little bit like a ritual. We'll say, I'll say it briefly, and then just let yourself feel it inside. For the sake of training and understanding our interconnection, I follow the precept not to harm others or myself. For the purposes of training and understanding our interconnection, I follow the precept not to take that which is not given, not to steal. For the purposes of training and understanding our interconnection, I follow the precept to be careful with my sexuality, and during the retreat time, 9 to 5, to keep it really to myself. For the purposes of training and understanding our interconnection, I follow the precept of skillful speech, of wise speech, which means here noble silence except when we are talking together. For the purposes of training and understanding our interconnection, I agree not to use intoxicants. And during the time 9 to 5, to be not to use a cell phone except for purposes like finding the time or taking notes. Good. So thank you. So these help us. Okay. A few minutes more about impermanence, and then we will meditate on impermanence. Okay. So, Israel made a good point just talking with me that when we talk about ignorance, it's important to understand that we're not talking about ignorance of facts. It's more ignorance of our deeper nature and of the way things work in the mind. It's not ignorance of details or facts. We have plenty of that, you know. But there's some kind of ignorance, and sometimes also the word is used in English, delusion. We don't see clearly, you know. We may have all sorts of knowledge, but there are certain things we don't see. You know, we don't see our habits. We don't see our conditioning. We don't see our trauma. You know, we don't see these things well, and they drive our behavior. And so we really don't see sometimes very clearly why we are acting in a certain way. You know, and the whole idea is that we come to self-knowledge, and this helps bring about greater freedom and more skillful action. It's very simple. It's what we do is here very, very, very simple. One of the ways that we don't see clearly impermanence is through the influence of language. And as many of you know, what we do in meditation is actually we go increasingly beneath the level of concepts and beneath the level of language. That language often, again, I don't know Hebrew, but I think it's fairly similar. I hear Hebrew is more emphasis on verbs. That's what I was told yesterday. I don't know if you would agree. But often, with language, the words almost make us think that things are permanent. Okay, there is a tree. You know, we don't say there is an impermanent tree. We say there is a tree. There is a house. There is a person. And the language may make us think that things are solid and that things are lasting forever. Right? And language, of course, is very helpful, very practical, but there can be some confusion. Some of you may have read the philosopher Wittgenstein. Mm-hmm. Wittgenstein says, we are bewitched by language. Mm-hmm. We are confused by language. And we don't see things clearly. He said that maybe 70 years ago, that language plays a large role. And so a lot of the training in meditation is to move out of the conceptual world into more direct experience. And then, you know, again, not that concepts are bad, but that we often don't see them clearly, and we often are dominated by words and concepts. And so we want to be able to use concepts rather than be dominated by concepts unconsciously, to use that word. And yeah, so language makes it harder to see impermanence. So our meditation we'll do right now. Well, first, so I invite you to find a good posture for yourself. Most important thing for the posture is to have the back straight and a good connection with the ground. And during our meditation, if you ever get tired, it's fine to stand up. Okay? You can stand up for 2 minutes, for 5 minutes, stand up for a while, sit back down, stand up, and so forth. So no problem. So find a posture where you can be relatively stable. You know, we'll probably go for maybe another, maybe 20, 30 minutes. Back straight, good connection. See if you can let go of any tension in your body. And then we'll start with the staying with the breath. So we typically begin our practice with some settling or stabilizing of attention. We attend to the breath where the breath is easiest to follow, usually, for most of us. And so we can, if you're new, you can try to see where the breath is easiest to follow. Sometimes it's the belly, sometimes it's the area of the chest, sometimes it's the area of the nostrils. Breath coming in and out through the nostrils, sometimes the upper lip. Some people give attention to the breath in the whole body. So see where it's easiest, and if you're newer, it can also even be helpful to put your hand, unless if you're with the breath in the belly, put your hand on your belly and just notice it moving. It can be helpful. And it's also helpful with the breath, particularly when the mind is distracted, to use some very quiet labeling in the mind. There are different ways to do this. One way is to have your mind say with the in-breath, you say in, and you are aware of the sensations of breathing. We want to just be aware of sensations, not so much to have a visualization of the breath, not to force the breath, just let the breath be natural. And we are aware of the sensations, and we can say in, and then the breath goes out, we say out. And then it can be very helpful to bring your awareness for the third part of the breath, which is there's a pause, usually for most people, between out-breath and in-breath. It can not be so long, maybe half second, but it's often a time when the mind gets distracted. And so if you can find some way to bring your attention to this third part of the breath. Sometimes we just feel the hands, or you feel your contact with the cushion or ground, or you feel your whole body, and then you go back to the in-breath. So it'd be in-breath with the breath, out-breath, and then pause, and then you, with the pause, you can bring your attention to, again, your hands or your contact with the chair or cushion, or your whole body. And if this is a new technique for you, you don't have to do it. It's up to you. But it can be very helpful once you do it for some time to have a deeper concentration. And if it's new to you, it can feel a little bit awkward for, you know, a day or two, but you'll get used to it. And then for some people, the breath isn't the best place to focus. You know, maybe if there is any history of asthma or some way that the breath is not neutral, then we can have awareness be focused on something else. Again, it could be the hands, sensations of the hands, it could be contact with the ground, it could be listening, being with sounds. Sometimes there are people for whom the breath doesn't work so well. So our first process of settling is just to be with the breath or another object. Helpful to, if you're a little distracted, to use the labels and keep coming back. And this can be very good to do in every sitting, at least for a short time, until we have some stability. And now the second instruction is to bring in our ordinary mindfulness practice. And when you're practicing at home, we'll do three steps in this session: the settling or concentration, the basic mindfulness, and then a focus on impermanence. And if you're at home, you could do the same sequence, which gives you some preparation for practicing with impermanence. And when we're doing this, if we're really distracted, we may stay with the first one for a much longer time, just to settle. You have to know how your mind is in terms of practicing. And so the second practice of our ordinary mindfulness is when there is some degree of stability, when you're not so distracted, we then try to just notice and experience whatever is happening that takes us away from the breath. So we have the main focus on the breath, or the, if there is an alternative object, that's our main focus. We can call that the primary object, the primary focus. And then when the mind wanders, we try to see what has come. We try to see where the mind has wandered. So we might notice planning or thinking. And it can be helpful just to make a very quiet mental note. So we notice planning, or I notice remembering. You know, and I'm doing with the breath. I'm doing with the breath, in, out, pause, and then I have a planning thought, and I notice it very quickly. I might just say planning, and then I return to the breath. Or the thought might take me away, and I might not notice it for 30 seconds or a minute. And when I notice it, I just come back to the breath. And so often, once we notice thoughts, they don't stay. So we just can give the label, then we come back to the breath. With some other experiences, they will last for a while, even when we notice them. So maybe sometimes emotions, I can have sadness. I notice there's sadness, and maybe it stays for a while. If something stays for a while, I make the new experience, in this case, the sadness, I make this the new primary object, and I stay with it, and I explore it. What does it feel like in the body? What's the emotional energy? And so forth. What are the thoughts? And I stay with that emotion as long as it's predominant. It may just be a minute, or it may be 5 minutes. Doesn't matter. And I can give it a little label, sadness, irritation, happiness, whatever it is. I stay with it and I explore it. When it passes, or I don't know what is most predominant, then I always come back to the breath or to the alternative. Same thing if there are body sensations that take my attention. I have some strong sensations in my shoulder, and it's okay to stay with it. It's not an area of an injury. I just stay with it for a while, and I make the sensations the new primary object. So I stay with the sensations until they're no longer predominant, or I'm not sure what's predominant, or I'm a little confused. Then I would go back to the breath. So this is our ordinary mindfulness practice, being with the breath, the primary object, and noticing where the mind goes when it goes away from the breath, you know, over and over again. And it can be helpful, again, to use labels, just to say. And you can give special labels if there are repetitive thoughts, like, you know, again, might be that decision you're thinking of. You can just say decision, or you can say discussion with this person. If it's something's happening a lot, you can give it a label so that you see it more quickly when you come back. So we'll just do this very basic mindfulness practice, maybe for 5 minutes. And now as we continue to sit quietly, I'll introduce some very simple practices to help us to be aware of impermanence. And we'll work with three senses, one at a time. First is to work with sound, to practice with sound. And this would be to be aware on the level of sound of a sound arising and staying and passing. Don't have to think about it too much, but just to notice the flow of sound. And I'll bring in some sounds myself using the bell and some other things. And so you can just let your awareness notice a sound and be particularly aware of how something begins, stays for a while, and then passes away. We'll do this with sound, and then I'll bring in attention to sensations of the body as a second way to study impermanence. And then the third will be to watch the flow of thoughts, to watch thoughts coming and going. We'll do those one at a time, or maybe about 5 minutes each. So now attend to sounds, being aware of how a given sound arises, stays for a while, and then ends. Now the second area for exploring impermanence is body sensations. And you can be aware of any sensation in your whole body. That's one possibility. Or you might like to just have a focus maybe on the legs or the upper body. That's your choice. But just to be aware of the sensation again, arising, staying for a while, and passing. Sometimes things arise and stay and pass very quickly. So to bring your mindfulness just to notice what is happening with sensations. your mind wanders, just keep coming back. No need to judge oneself, just that very simple return, coming back over and over again. And now we'll move to a third way of being mindful of impermanence. This can be a little more challenging, but try to notice when thoughts arise and stay and pass away. You can be with your breath and then just have a kind of intention to notice any thoughts that come. Notice them when they arrive, notice how they stay for a little while, and notice how they end. So do this just now we'll just do it for about 3 minutes with thinking if it occurs. You may often just notice thoughts right when they've ended, and that's okay. As the mind gets more quiet, you can see thoughts also when they begin. And now for now it might be enough just to know, oh, the thought just ended. That's fine. Now in a moment, I'll ring the bell, which in this case will mean the end of the sitting. So, thank you. And in just a few moments, we'll have a walking period, and I'll be inviting you to continue with the practice in walking. I'll give a little more instructions in a moment, but I wanted to see if there are any questions or observations. We're still probably, many of us, just settling down, right? Mind can still be active. How many people feel you're still very much just settling down? And that's fine.
I can feel the opposite, like I'm almost falling asleep. Like, I'm so...
Oh, so yeah, and when you do a day like this, it's very common, as most of you know, to be sometimes a little bit sleepy. So what you can just know it's normal. You can sometimes try to sit more with the back straight. You could stand up, and then you can also maybe take a vigorous walk when you walk here or outside. Just walk. But just the main thing is to know it's normal. Mm-hmm. And you can also watch sleepiness. Sleepiness is impermanent. Mm-hmm. And actually, some of you probably in retreats or sometimes in sitting, you sometimes can actually be aware of the impermanence and watch it arise, stay for a while, and then end. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when you're not really physically tired. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other observations or questions? Yeah.
I still find it very challenging to follow thoughts, to observe thoughts.
So challenging to follow. How many had that experience? Okay. That would be common. I think not everyone raised a hand, but I think they should have. Probably. Thoughts are the hardest. So what we can do is, for most of us, not everyone, but what we can do is we can do training in learning more about impermanence, maybe with the first two more. That is, with sounds. Probably with sounds, not so hard, right?
No, sounds are great.
You could watch it arise, stay, and pass, and you could know and notice that. And probably sensations also probably not so hard, right? So you might want to do more time training with the thoughts, with the body sensations and the sounds, and then just do thoughts a little bit, see how it is.
Okay. Yeah. Because I'm curious, how is it possible at all? Because there's the thought that is thinking the thought, isn't it?
Yeah, but sometimes when the awareness gets stronger, it's more like there's some techniques I can, one technique, for example, is you imagine your awareness like a black space and you look for thoughts to come. You actually say,
okay.
Almost like you're waiting for them to come. You're almost like you're at the airport at arrivals and you see people, I just came through a few days ago, people had to wait on a line. I don't know if you have to, but I had to wait on the line, and then you get through customs, and you go to arrivals, and there's just one person comes, and another one, and it's almost like you imagine you just have your awareness, and you just say, okay, let me just notice when something comes, and one technique again is to imagine almost like this black space, and then you let the thoughts just appear. Yeah. So there's some techniques for doing that, but it's generally a little harder.
It's a little harder.
Yeah. But you can. But I think you're pointing to something, and it's related to your interest in non-duality also. There's a way in which we're thinking, in which we would say in Buddhist language we identify with the thinking. I'm really thinking it, and we're like that's 100% of the energy, right? And when we train more, we can actually have it be a little bit different. When the awareness gets stronger, we can have the awareness be there, and the thoughts are more secondary. Yeah. So that's not easy, but it's possible. Yeah. And in other words, the identity is more with the awareness, and then the thoughts occur. And sometimes we can notice thoughts occurring without really having a strong identity. They're just coming because of the past. There was a book on this. I don't know if you, probably some of you know this in Israel. It's related to psychology and meditation by Mark Epstein called Thoughts Without a Thinker.
Without a Thinker. It's quite simple.
Thoughts Without a Thinker.
Quite a while ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can, the key is to have the, and this takes training, but you have the identity. Over time can shift away from, my thought, let me think it, like that. you're not even thinking that, it's just automatic, right? And then you shift to having the awareness be more the identity, and then the thoughts are more secondary, or sensations, or sounds. Israel, please.
It's interesting to me to practice with the intention of impermanence.
Yeah.
I never actually did it that way.
Yeah.
And then the anticipation for something to fade had it more lasting for me. So the anticipation that it will fade away.
Yeah.
It's a rise, it stays, it fades, as all things.
Yeah.
But actually the mind anticipates the fading away and then it lasts.
It can last sometimes for a while.
It's a sort of resistance.
It's being resistant to it. I'm going to trick Israel. This thought will not be impermanent, or this sensation. So, yeah. So you can actually, what you could do is actually not so much anticipate, right? You probably had the thought too. You just because the instructions are not to anticipate. The instructions are to be aware when it arises, be aware when it stays, and then be aware when it changes or passes away. You know, so it doesn't actually have to end, but you can also notice change, like for sensations, or some with our sound, with the machine. In some way it's staying, but it's a, you know, kind of small changes in the sound, right? And so we can actually, we will know that everything will end eventually, but we don't have to so much anticipate it. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, I think it's really useful for pain or negative emotions.
That's right.
Because then you actually want it to go away.
And that relates to your question here. So we would actually, yeah, we'd want to be careful, yeah, because we sometimes say impermanence is good when we have the unpleasant, and it's bad when we have the pleasant, right? And so here we want to be careful if we have extra mind energy around, I want this to stay or I want this to leave. We want to notice that, right? So that's important. And yeah, and so it's interesting, impermanence is so fundamental to practice, but I know that I have, in my experience, received almost no instructions on doing impermanence practice for a longer time. See, because you could do basically what we did. You could do it for a whole day. You could do a retreat where you do it for 2 days, 3 days. You could do like the three we're doing and do it, you know, but with the understanding that it's, you have to have some degree of settledness. So you might have some of your time just with the breath settling. And then when you get settled some, maybe you do some mindfulness, and then you're pretty settled, then you can do the impermanence practice. And you can, the learning comes from doing it a lot. You know, we're going to get the instructions, but the learning comes when you do it, you know, when you watch, like what you're saying, and you watch that and you do it for, you know, 6 hours in a day, and you do it for a few days in a row. Like on retreat.
On retreat.
On retreat, yeah. Yeah. At home you can do it, special circumstances. You go to the dentist. Notice impermanence.
But that's short, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Short.
Yeah. No, there was someone who was, we were talking with someone yesterday who, she had a root canal. Yeah? Not so short. But anyway, I'm just joking.
Doesn't seem short.
Not at that moment. See, that's what we want to study. Things are impermanent, but, you know, something like when something is a lot, we think it's permanent. Mm-hmm. And the mind says, this will last forever. So that's some of what we explore, right? We see how the mind works, particularly when there's something we don't like. And because if we know it's impermanent, it actually can be very skillful. You know, maybe I'm really caught. This is very unpleasant, or I don't like that interaction. And if you were, you know, reflect on impermanence, you're not, maybe not so stuck. Right? So very helpful.
But there are things that last for a long time. There are pains that can last, you know, chronic pain.
Yeah.
It lasts,
yeah. That's true. Yeah, and so with impermanence, we don't just look for it to end, but we look for it to change.
Okay.
So that we add that. So that could be valuable, you know. So we look also for change. It could be with the sound. Again, the training here first is with very simple things that are not hard. And always when we're doing training, we move from the easier to the more difficult. That's the principle of how training works, right? Mm-hmm. So you do something just with sensations, not a problem. Sound, not a problem. But you keep keep with it for a long time, and you kind of, you, that's where the training occurs. Then you bring it to more, to things which are a little more difficult, like thoughts. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of the story of King Solomon.
Yeah.
Who's part of the tradition here in Israel?
King Solomon, yes. Yes.
And he sent his servant out to on a journey to discover what will make a happy person sad and a sad person happy. And the person went on a journey for a year, looking, and finally at the very end, and I think the end was he was going to chop the head off if he didn't find it. Mm-hmm. So it was a very serious journey. And finally he found it, and it was in a jeweler's little tent in a market, and it was on a ring, and it said, and it was just very simple. It's very similar teaching with this too shall change.
Yeah.
And so Solomon apparently wore that on his ring all the time.
Hmm.
And so just thinking of how this teaching is in this tradition as well.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's many traditions, yeah.
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 But he wore it all the time.
It yes, like it could be a possible startup.
Totally.
For rings, yeah. Any other questions, observations? We'll maybe have one more, and then we'll have walking time.
I have a last one, if I could.
Yeah, let's see if someone else has one. Mm-hmm. A question or observation of what you experienced. Okay, why don't we also keep saying our names, so I remember.
My name is Alona.
Alona. Okay.
It's something more technical. I realize, and it's been going on for quite a while, that once I close my eyes and take the posture, the whole sense of symmetry in the body somehow gets rather distorted, and the body is not symmetrical to start with. But no, but it's I lose the sense of symmetry, the sense of physical balance, inner balance.
Yeah, so kind of sometimes a loss of symmetry. When you're meditating, it's quite normal.
It is?
Yeah, yeah. It's quite common, especially when you first practice for some time, especially in retreats. Yeah, I had periods where that happened, where I would be sitting and I had a sense that my right shoulder was another 10 feet higher. You know, it was like, I had thought that if you look at me, I'm actually like that. But it wasn't true. But it feels like that from the inside, and it's just normal.
It makes you want to move, though, you know, to fix
An adjustment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mostly just stay with it.
Just stay with it?
Yeah, just stay with it. Or, you know, just notice. Notice if your mind is bothered, but just to know it's normal, and it's there's some unusual, kind of unusual things that happen at times when you first meditate, that it can be, I don't know whether it's just like, you know, something happening with body perception, you know, and something just, I don't know, getting adjusted. But I know I have had that a lot, and, you know, it stays for a while. It's impermanent. it stays for a while, and I just notice if your thoughts get, you know, just not to make a problem of it. It doesn't mean anything deep. Okay. Sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so we have a walking period. Let's do 20 minutes of walking, and you can use the bathrooms. And the instructions here are something similar. First of all, how many people have not had walking meditation instructions? Okay, so why don't you stay here when other people go, and we'll for the time being, we'll remember what we do in walking. We'll move all the cushions in the middle. We can put them on top of the ones on the side. And I'll give instructions just for a few minutes here. And so let's just, I guess, do people go back and forth, like walking slowly?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you could use the second half of the room here, or use the other room. But here are the, maybe let's not go, yeah, I'll give the instructions. Okay, if you know walking meditation, just maybe like we were just doing, you can think of it as three steps maybe. First is just making sure you're settled. So maybe if you're pretty settled, that might just be a minute or something. Make sure your mind is somewhat calm in your walking. And then second is you can have a little, start with some mindfulness, just to notice what's happening. And it might be mostly just staying with the walking, you know, however you do that. You know, we often have just awareness of the feet as we walk. Is that the main technique taught here?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think you've had the exact same instruction that we give, right? And so you could do with that. And then after a while, maybe after a few minutes, you're fairly settled. Then you can also just do exactly what we just did with, as you walk back and forth, maybe the first with sound, and maybe 5 minutes with sound, 5 minutes with sensation. Could do a little bit more. And if you want to work with thoughts just for a little while, do that. And if that's too much, you can stay with the, go back to the sound or body sensations. We're basically just continuing this in different posture. Okay? Any, is that clear enough? We'll keep on doing this, okay? So I'll stay here just for a few moments with anyone who is newer to walking meditation.